Okay, so starting off again and talking about financial guarantee contracts from a different aspect this time, so looking at the measurement of the actual financial guarantee contract. Hannah. Thank you. Agenda paper 6 is about financial guarantee contracts, and this time the ones that have been issued by an entity. And the specific circumstance that's been brought to our attention is where premiums are payable by the holder to the issuer over the life of the guarantee rather than as a single upfront payment of premium. The question we've been asked is whether the measurement of expected credit losses for such financial guarantee contracts should consider the future premium receipts due from the holder, and if so, how. Now, IFRS 9 note that a financial guarantee contract, the entity is required to make payments only in the event of default by the debtor in accordance with the terms of the instrument that's guaranteed. And we note that the cash outflows under the guarantee depend upon the risk of the default of the guaranteed asset in that case. In contrast, the premiums that the issuer receives are subject to the risk of default by the holder of the guarantee. These different risks, if we try and reflect them in the measurement of our expected credit losses, and an approach that would do this is to take your look at your provision for expected credit losses in respect of your expected cash outflows payable under the guarantee, less any reimbursements in respect of those outflows, would be considered separately from looking at your expected credit losses in respect of future premiums receivable. So you still have to look at your future premiums receivable, but not necessarily try and do the two as one calculation. I'd be interested to know what your views are on this particular issue.
Okay, just before I open it up, so we're saying that we think you take into account recoveries, but not premiums in the measurement.
Yeah, when you're looking at just the...
Okay, and on this one, I guess just before I open it up, so that I'm not being difficult when people start talking... not annoyingly so, hopefully. What I don't want to have here is a sort of general discussion about accounting for financial guarantees, but rather focusing on the expected credit loss measurement associated with them, if that's okay. And with that,
okay. I think the paper lays out fairly clearly that we're looking at whether you want to measure your ECL net, you know, net of cash inflows, including premiums, or do it on a gross basis. And looking at whether you have two cash flow streams or one net cash flow stream, one being the premium, you know, and the second being the default on the underlying asset. I think in reading the paper, you know, I would agree with the conclusion it got to, as you have two cash flow streams that you need to look at. One is the premium stream, and there may be expected credit losses on that, but they are separate and distinct from the expected credit losses that you have on the underlying instrument that has been guaranteed. And we would look at revenue, you know, recognition on the cash inflow stream, and then your expected loss on the cash outflow stream.
Okay, good. Thank you. Have
yes, thanks. I will be quick too. I completely agree with Ellen, but I think we have. Finally, if we are in a P&L perspective, we have four risks that could be interested regarding financial guarantee, issued financial guarantee. The first one is the expected loss, as you said, when the guaranteed asset is defaulting. The second one is the potential revenue loss if the guarantee holder stops paying. And the last one is the overall potential loss coming from a negative cash flow resulting from the totality of the operation. These are three different risks. From my perspective, only the first one, which is relative to the real credit loss coming from the default debtor, is something which should be captured in this IFRS standard. I would only raise maybe two attention points that could be maybe not fully anecdotal, but you will see that. The first one is in some contracts, it can happen that the payment of the premium is not a payment of premium for a certain period of time. It's a we are talking about non-cancellable guarantees with a different payment over time. And it's not exactly the same as premium paid for a period of 1 year, then 1 year, then 1 year, until the end of the underlying assets. That could make maybe a slight difference, I don't know. The second one is when you are talking about usual guaranteed contracts in which there are premium paid each year, for instance, to sustain the guarantee all over the time. You might consider that, in fact, the effective life of the guarantee is not completely adjusted to the underlying assets, but only adjusted to the period for which the premium has been paid.
If the guarantee were to fall away, contingent on the premium.
Exactly, and that would be also quite consistent from my understanding on the. And the regulatory treatment of such contracts, because you need to have them, you need to be able to guarantee their eligibility to take them into account. And
yeah. Right. I think that's fair. I think we can pick that up in the summary.
In the summary.
Did anyone have anything they wanted to add to that one? No? Okay, so we'll confirm the analysis in the paper and add this point that was raised about the contingency of the guarantee. I think we've sort of assumed in the case fact pattern that it's not cancelable, but that would be relevant to the expectations. I agree with that. All right.